Excellent.
My only request is that you send me a copy of the recording. Is that okay?
Absolutely. And we talked to I talked to Stephanie yesterday about that, Jeffrey. That's absolutely no problem. In fact, you're more than welcome. We have been studying your book, Little Red Book of Selling, for the last several weeks, and all of those recordings are posted on my website, so you can go back and listen to our discussions of each of your chapters. So I'm going to introduce you officially here, if we could, and then Stephanie sent you a list of questions, I think, that some of my callers in on this call have submitted, and just hoping we could kind of go through some of those, and you could share with us some words of wisdom. But let's get this officially started. Everybody, good morning. This is the Thursday morning MV Pro call. Thanks, everybody, for coming on. Really appreciate your time. We're very excited this morning to have the author of the book that we've been studying for the last several weeks, the Little Red Book of Selling. Jeffrey Gittimer does a weekly New York or a weekly column that's read by over 4 million people in the country. He's got over a dozen books. I counted 13. How many exactly do we have, Jeffrey?
I have 11 that I've authored by myself. There are a couple that I've co-authored, but did most of the writing. I just don't take any credit for that because I feel like if somebody else's name is on it, it's not as authentic as it could possibly be. But 11 on my own.
Absolutely.
And two that I'll finish this summer.
Excellent. So he's one of the world's most dynamic and excellent and straightforward sales trainers. And we, on our little MV Pro call here, are honored and very appreciative. So Jeffrey, thank you so much for your time. It means a ton to us. And if it's okay with you, I'd like to start right in on some of the questions, as we have a limited amount of time, and I know you do as well. Your time is very valuable as well.
What is the expected outcome of the people that are on the call? What would they like to do when this call is over?
For me, breathe again, because I've been nervous as heck about having you on and having nightmares that nobody would show up on the call for this week.
That's pretty interesting. You know, if you've read The Little Red Book of Selling, you recognize that I'm a pretty regular guy. Number two, and I don't know whether it comes out or not, but I'm a Northeastern person. I cut my teeth making sales in New York City. I did a lot of cold calling in my early life. And then I evolved to a point where I felt I was pretty good at sales, and I began to write about it. And that was the turning point of my career. When you write, you win. And anything that you're doing in your business has at its core writing. If you wake up in the morning and you send out your first tweet of the day, that's writing. If you have a blog and you post in your blog, that's writing. If you send someone a follow-up email, that's writing. If you do anything having to do with business, sending somebody a letter, thanking them for their, you know, a little thank you card, all of that has at its core writing. And most people don't do that. They wake up in the morning and they read. Or they wake up, which is okay, but worse, they wake up in the morning and they watch television. Or they wake up in the morning and they have a cup of coffee and they look at a newspaper. Nothing could be worse than waking up in the morning and looking at a newspaper or waking up in the morning and watching television. Those are both total, complete wastes of time and wastes of life. And I know it because I used to do it. There's nothing from it. While you're watching television, I'm writing a book. Which do you think will help a career more? Being an expert at Good Morning America or figuring out what you have to do in your life, whether it's with water or with anything having to do with your career or your thought process or your philosophy or even your attitude. So
yeah, that's one of the things that we've done, and Jeffrey, that's excellent, and I appreciate that. One of the things we've done is we've read your book, is gone through and kind of related it to our industry. So if I could maybe do that on what you're saying, that.
Sure.
An excellent idea, and one of the suggestions that I have is maybe thank you notes, you guys, to some of your existing customers or somebody that you just spoke to yesterday. That'd be an excellent time to jot down a thank you note and mail those out even before you get the day going. So yeah, really, really good idea.
Are all the people that are in the network or in your customer base, are they young, upwardly mobile people? Are they middle-aged people? Are they older people? What's the demographic of your customer?
There's a mix on this call right now. Most of us are up and mobile and active, but the type of job we do, it's traditionally a commission-based position and requires a higher work ethic and a much higher maturity level. So all of us on the call are in the water treatment industry very specifically.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, I lived in Indiana for 4 years, and I had a Culligan water treatment because I drank water out of our pond in the backyard, and you actually had to bleach it.
Yeah,
so our water for about 4 years smelled like bleach. Maybe that's why I'm bald. I bleached my hair out of my head. But the water in that particular process was horrible, but that was in 1979, 80, and 81. So the business has totally transformed to a point where there's no longer a 50-gallon water tank. It's something that, and I don't know, I'm sure yours vary in size and you have different products that you offer, but the bottom line is it's a much more sophisticated process right now, and everybody needs it. It's not something that you don't, that you can just go, I'll just drink it right out of the tap. No one does anymore.
Well, you know, Jeffrey, 67% of the people in this country buy bottled water as an alternative to their drinking water. And if you look, we Americans throw away approximately 35,000 plastic water bottles per minute into our landfills in this country. So this is something that makes our industry does have a pretty significant impact in oil and energy consumption and environmental concerns and that sort of thing. Jeff, can we go through and answer some of the questions that some of my callers submitted?
Yep.
I know that I could probably have conversations with you for hours, having written the book, and I'd love to hear some of your feedback and thoughts.
But let's go through the questions.
Basically, this call, just to kind of give you an understanding, we have several different companies and manufacturers represented on this call from all over the industry. We don't talk. We do this call every week, but we do not talk specific products or specific companies. We talk about the industry as a whole, and it's one of my efforts to bring the industry as a whole. So that gives you an idea of where the questions are coming from. And so I'm just going to kind of go through my list here, and we'll see what we can get through, and maybe you can answer them as we go. So the first one here says, I've listened to several sales trainers that have a decent message that's obvious in their presentation, but not actually practice their own suggestions, or at least not for a very long time. How do you stay in tune with your students? How do you make sure that what you practice, that you're constantly practicing what you preach?
Well, because I write every week, I'm constantly updating my own philosophy and my own strategies. That's number one. Number two, I make sales. I'm on the phone with customers, or I'm out in the field doing seminars, and if my data is not 1,000% up to date, somebody's going to call me on it. And so far in the past 20 years, I've never been called on it. I'm assuming that you're referring to people that only speak and are no longer active in the sales community. That would not be me. I go out every day, and I'm responsible for making more sales for my business. That's the only way to stay current. I pay attention to what's around me. I look at the marketplaces. I'm very active in social media and business social media. In fact, I've written a book on it. And I think that if you want to find out really how valid somebody is, look how many Twitter followers they have. To me, that, you know, when someone says, well, I help people with social media, the first thing I do is go to their Twitter site and see how many followers they have. And if they have 875 followers and they've tweeted 4,300 times, I delete that person. You know, look at my Twitter site, I'm going to pass 50,000 this week, and I've only tweeted a couple thousand times. So the challenge for anybody is, what's the value that you're offering to others? Because Twitter is not about tweeting. Twitter is about being retweeted. Twitter is about having other people follow you because they got your retweet and think, oh, this guy's pretty cool. Let me see what else he has to say. It's also about being listed so that your tweets go off into a special place rather than just stay in the Twitter feed. So I look at myself as current as I possibly can be. And when that currency reveals itself to an audience, not only do they pay attention, they're willing to buy what it is that I have to sell.
Yeah. Who are some of your favorite sales managers, some of your mentors? I mean, I know...
My favorite guys are all dead. Thank goodness. My favorite guys are all dead. I grew up listening to Earl Nightingale. I grew up listening to J. Douglas Edwards. I grew up listening to people that sold it the old way. The more current people that have recently passed away, like Charlie Jones or Willie Gale, those are people that had impact on me just because they understood the value of getting next to people. They understood that humor played a major role in their process, and they understood that they had to love what they did. Everybody that I've ever been in contact with who was exceptionally successful loved what they did. In the early days, I followed Zig Ziglar, but he didn't change his message. It wasn't a current message. People have a speech or they have a process, and they're great people. You can't take that away from them, but it's the same tune. I can remember going to my first Tom Hopkins seminar in 1981 and loving it. And then I went to the next one, and it was the same thing. Yeah. And then I went to the third one just to make sure that I wasn't off my rocker, and it was the same thing.
Right.
So I quit going.
Well,
it
let
wasn't
me ask
current.
You, that's one of the questions that we had on here, actually, and it's a nice segue, is how have the sales techniques or customers' attitudes changed in the last, say, decade, you know, particularly since late 90s or...
Well, the answer is a very simple word, internet. The customer is now smarter than the salesperson, times 10. If you go to a car dealership to buy a car, you've already gone on the internet 20 times. You've researched 10 different models of cars from 10 different manufacturers and have all of the costs. And you go into the sales guy who's still smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee and sounding like an idiot. Those people are gone. The car salespeople will not exist in 5 years.
Right.
And they could not exist tomorrow if General Motors would just put the buy now button in. they would all be gone. Every one of them would be gone. And your car would be delivered by an 18-year-old kid who's computer literate.
Let me ask you, we had a question, a couple specifics for individuals and who wanted some advice. We had one from one of the callers that he says that he understands after studying the books and being in sales that it's really important, it's up to him to keep the positive attitude. But he says, what advice can you give or what's the most effective way to overcome the natural ups and downs that occur in a new sales profession? And he wanted to clarify, he says he's the only sales professional in a 40-year-old company that prior to 6 months ago did not have a sales department, so all their sales came from service. So they recently created the sales department, and he's been there about 6 months, and there are those natural ups and downs that occur when you get started in a new industry. What do you suggest, how do you suggest he would overcome those natural challenges? That's a fairly common thing in our industry, to get out there, you know.
It's referred to as rejection, or when the customer says no to you, or you're unable to gain a meeting that you're hoping to gain, or you continue to have people that give you I need to think about it, or I want to talk about it with somebody else, or can you provide me with a reference, some kind of stall that prevents a sale from taking place, or someone that just rudes you out and says, get the hell out of here. All of those have to be taken in a mental way to where you don't become rejection weak. Many people can't take three no's. But if you think back to your time when you were a kid and you were in the aisle of the grocery store with your mother and you wanted a candy bar, hell, you were willing to take corporal punishment to get that candy bar. And most people lose that tenacity. Most people don't have the same tenacity that they had when they were 2 or 3 or 4 years old. They take one no and they get all slumpy. And the challenge is to take no as a pathway to yes. No one's going to say yes to you all the time. I'm doing seminars with the Baseball Hall of Fame player, Dave Winfield. Winfield made an out 7 out of 10 times for 20 years. He failed 7 out of 10 times for 20 years. That got him into the Hall of Fame because most guys fail 8 out of 10 times. And you have to look at this from the perspective of if you can just improve your skill level 20%, you'll make a ton of money and you won't care about being rejected. You'll thank people for rejecting you. Hey, buddy, thanks so much for telling me no. I totally appreciate it. I love the fact that you're not interested because normally it takes me 4 people that are not interested before I can get to 1 person that is interested. And so far, you're only my 2nd no interest. Do you happen to know anybody else that might not be interested?
All right.
Here's the deal. You're not having any fun at it. If you had more fun at it, you wouldn't take rejection as something that's against you. You just take it as the guy doesn't know any better. You have a little bit of pity for him, or you can blame it on yourself. Say, hey, listen, I'm doing something wrong here because you haven't said yes, and I know our product is the best thing on the planet. Can you, like, just give me an idea about the real reason why you're saying no to me so that the next guy that I go to won't do the same thing?
Yeah.
I mean, just, you know, once they've said no, go for it.
So,
what do you have to lose? No again?
Very true. One of the other questions we had was about the networking organization. Some of the and we have one member who is on our call that says he's a member of one of the national networking organizations. Because each week you have members speak for about a 30 seconds, give a little commercial and testimonial.
Right.
But in this group, there seems to be a pretty high turnover rate, and the referrals are difficult to give, and there are very few returns. How do you know when it's time to leave a group like that?
I wouldn't even join the group because everyone in there is a taker.
Okay, good. Are you a fan of
join a group where the whole where the purpose of the group is to take? And people, what happens is the reason there's high turnover is they don't feel like they're getting enough out of it. And the reason is they're not giving enough. If you become the world's greatest giver,
if you can find one that is where the attitude is.
No. You don't find one. You start one. You don't find one. You start one. And I ran a leads group in Charlotte for years. Eat for breakfast. Everyone paid their own way. And we tried to give a little bit of a sales lesson every day. And then you had to bring 2 people to give away, 2 of your best customers. And if it was bullshit, someone would call bullshit.
Yeah, good. Good, good. Yeah, good answer.
They were all successful business people.
So did you ever release, this was a quick and easy one for you, did you ever release the sales balls? And if so, what colors are they offered in?
I only released the one, and they're in red. And you can get one, I think, for $20 on my internet e-commerce site.
The request we had.
Oh, did I ever
for blue?
Yeah, well, blue is that would be harder to get.
It was pink for us sales girls.
No, I understand that. You don't want red balls when you very first start out.
That's right. So,
but let me tell you something. The answers are pretty cool. I had somebody had one of the red balls on their desk, and their customer came in, sat at their desk, looked at the ball, flipped it over, and the first thing that it said is, "You suck at sales." You have to be careful about where you put it.
Yeah, sometimes you do. Another question that we had here is, how do you overcome the loyalty? So we've got one of our clients, one of our callers, that works in an area where another company has a tremendous amount of customer loyalty. So he came into one of the competitors of this company that is very well ingrained into the community, and there's a tremendous amount of loyalty to this competitor. how does he, or what advice can you give to him to get the sale, but not
first of all,
not destroying the loyalty?
Here's the most important thing to understand. If the customer is loyal to somebody else for a reason or a multitude of reasons, you better find out why. You have to understand that loyalty doesn't exist on a whim. It exists for some very specific reasons. I can give you several reasons, but most of them, you don't know what they, you might never know what they are if you're unable to, if you're unwilling to ask the question, what makes you loyal? Not why are you loyal, what makes you loyal? And I'll give you a very specific example. My copier company is Technicom. The president of the company is Jim Riggins. 24 years ago, when I came to Charlotte, I was responsible. I was doing a project for somebody to do a business magazine for new businesses. And I went to Technicom, and I engaged this guy, Jim Riggins, and he bought for me, bought like a $4,800 ad in the magazine, big spread. And he said, what are you doing for a copy machine? And I was pretty embarrassed that I didn't have the dollars for a copy machine. And I said, look, it's not in my budget right now, but the minute I get it, the minute it happens, you'll be my vendor. The next morning, a knock on my door, and a guy came over and said, Jim Riggins is delivering this copier to you. When you can afford to pay for it, start paying. Until then, it's free.
Wow.
Now, I've been his customer for 24 years. My bet is I've given him $500,000 worth of business in both toner and repairs and new machines. Am I going to switch?
No.
Never. I'm never. We're best friends. We've raised our kids together. I train the salespeople for nothing. I can't do enough for the guy.
So would you talk to a sales guy who came in from another copier company? Would you talk
to him? Yeah, I would tell him to go call Jim, and I would advise him to go work there.
Okay.
That guy couldn't pry me away, but there are other companies. We just switched payroll companies. We've been doing business with one for, 15, 16 years. But my guy said that this new guy was better, and he recommended that we switch, and I said, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And keep in mind, oftentimes when you're asking someone for new business, you may not be talking to the decision maker. I have plenty
right.
of people who work for me, but I don't work in my office.
Right. A couple other calls here or questions here, Jeffrey. One of the easy ones going back is, how's your water?
My water is controlled by the people in our building. And each one of our refrigerators has its own filter to it. But we pretty much, we drink it out of the tap and, through the refrigerator filter, and we drink bottled water, like 67% of the rest of the country.
You can put in a system that produces an unlimited supply of that right at your kitchen tap, better than bottled water quality, right at your kitchen tap for 15, 20 bucks a month. We'll have to talk about that another time.
Okay.
But your refrigerator filter comment made everybody on this call take a collective silent muted gasp. So I'll shoot you an email on that a little later.
The refrigerator filter gets changed every 12 or 13 years, doesn't it?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Actually, I'll tell you. We use Diamond Springs water in our company because I'm friends with Marty Conti, who owns the company. So we have a guy deliver water in 5-gallon jugs. I have no idea how much it costs us. I train his people, and he pretty much provides us water on a deal that I really shouldn't even talk about.
Yeah.
When you're in, and many of those are water filter, they have the thing, the automatic filter that comes out of the wall rather than a jug of water. I think we have a couple of three of those.
Right, right. Okay, I think we have...
And here's the deal. Let me go back and just say this. I try to do business with people that I can form or develop a long-term relationship with. I've been in Charlotte for 24 years. I pretty much do business with my friends. And if you read, you know, if you look at my stuff, you'll know that one of my mantras is, all things being equal, people want to do business with their friends. All things being not quite so equal, people still want to do business with their friends, especially here in the South. Friendship is a very, very important part of the process. And you don't learn that growing up in Philly and New York City because it's pretty much a transactional deal. When you're talking to somebody about water, it's their life. You have to get pretty close to that person to be able to talk about them and or to be able to talk with them, and fear is not the only way.
Yeah, you're
oftentimes
absolutely right.
In a business like yours, fear plays a major role, or guilt plays a major role.
Right.
Oh, my gosh, there's a bug in your water, or, oh, my gosh, there's 35,000 bottles of water being thrown away every second. Okay, I'm not that socially conscious, but I certainly don't want to be part of that problem. I'd rather be part of that solution. And when someone tells me that, I need to know the five things that I can do to make my environmental life better, not just to make my water life better.
Right.
And that's what you could or should be tweeting about.
Okay. One last short question here before
sure.
we wrap up.
Do you guys
you
have do you have a corporate Twitter, or do each people have their own Twitter following?
I think that most of the callers, like I said, there are several different companies represented here. Motor Vitality, my company, we do have a Twitter feed, but would be embarrassed about how many followers there are. So give me a couple months and I'll.
Okay, cool. But listen, here's the deal. Most important thing that you can do in Twitter is help your customers with information. And when you do that, they'll get it to their customers.
We use
and they'll look at you as
regularly.
You know, you're the dude.
Yeah. We use LinkedIn and Constant Contact pretty regularly in sending that stuff out. And I know Twitter is that's kind of the big one. One more quick question here.
Sure.
How do you refill your bucket? You mentioned that you don't get up and you watch Good Morning America in the morning to read the newspaper.
Right.
I know you're very excited and you really love what you do. That's obvious in everything you write and even in hearing you speak there. But what do you do for fun? How do you refill your bucket?
I travel. I go to see new things. I catch new inspiration. I read. I talk to people that I believe can give me information that I currently do not have. I try to make friends with the highest level people that I can find. And then I try to keep that friendship by providing them with value. I want to make sure that they value my friendship as much as I value theirs, and I tell them. But to refill your bucket takes all kinds of inspiration. Predominantly, everyone has a core. My core is my family. That's where I get a ton of inspiration from children, grandchildren, and all the siblings that are there. I get a ton of information from my friends and a ton of inspiration from my friends. But when you land in a place that you've never been before and you get out and you walk around, it's ultimate inspiration. You just have to be able to afford to do it. And that affordability sometimes comes from going a little bit in debt to be able to get to the next plateau. But I can promise you that you'll never remember the 50 cold calls that you make, but you'll always remember landing in Paris.
Yeah.
So my mantra for that is always do what you'll remember the most.
Jeffrey, I've got just about 9 o'clock here. I wanted to tell you again how much we all appreciate it on behalf of this entire team. We refer to ourselves as the MV Professionals. But on behalf of this group, thank you for your time and what you do in our industry. Please keep it up. If there's ever anything that we can do, please let us know.
Cool.
It has been our honor and pleasure.
Mine. And I will talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
Hi, guys. Well, that was Mr. Gittimer, and I think that I would encourage each of you. I'll shoot an email out, and or I'll post his email address or his assistant's email address on the website so that you guys can click on that. I think it would be awesome if you could send a thank you note over to him, and appreciate it. We will, by the way, finish the book next week. Obviously, we didn't study any of the chapters this week. We will finish the last chapter in the Little Red Book of Selling next week, so be thinking about what book we want to study after that. Some of you I'll talk 2.5 hours. The rest of you have an excellent weekend and day, and I'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much, guys.